This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
From WBEZ Chicago and Illinois Public Radio, welcome to Prison Cast, a radio show for people incarcerated in Illinois and their loved ones. I'm your host, Erin Allen. And for this show, we're doing something a little different. We're partnering with the Mud Theater Project to bring you The Story of Violence, a radio play mostly written and performed by currently and formerly incarcerated actors and playwrights. We're airing this show on public radio stations across the state so folks inside can listen. And we're taping before a studio audience here in Chicago. Welcome, everybody. The Mud Theater Project is a Chicago nonprofit that uses storytelling for healing and social change. It was founded in 2018 inside the Dixon Correctional Center, but it has expanded to stages around Chicago, including this one here at our WBEZ studios. This production, The Story of Violence, all started when a guy named Brian Beals read an editorial in the Chicago Sun-Times while he was still locked up. It was calling for new voices to help find solutions to gun violence in the city. And it was written by a team of 12 incarcerated men, each of whom experienced violence in different ways. What you're going to hear over the next hour is their response to that editorial. Throughout the show, you'll also hear pre-recorded spoken word pieces that we taped at Dixon Correctional Center so the actors who are still in prison could help bring the show to life. A quick heads up. This show is about violence, so it's gonna get dark at times. It might not be appropriate for everybody. And stick with us for a conversation after the performance. We're gonna hear from the play's two lead writers about how it came to be. Now, without further delay, we're proud to present The Story of Violence.
Breaking news, Michael Mordrin, a 4-year-old boy, was shot in the head twice on Chicago's South Side. The CPD indicates that they have no suspect at this time.
News at 10, 7-year-old Broughton Miller was struck by a stray bullet while playing at a park in the Austin neighborhood.
This just in, two brothers were robbed and shot after leaving a pizza place in the Roseland community. 16-year-old Devon Wright and 15-year-old Deion Wright were rushed to the University of Chicago where they both succumbed to their injuries.
The 22-year-old mother of a 4-year-old, Liliana Fields, pleads with the Auburn Gresham community to help find suspects responsible for her daughter's murder.
15-year-old Marvel Cunningham was found dead in his...
Three separate shootings on the South Side left four dead and injured two police officers.
13-year-old Eric Crawford was shot by...
A deadly weekend leaves 8 people dead, 3 of whom were children, aged 12, 16, and 9. Chicago has had more than 500 deaths this year.
Tyrese Taylor, a 14-year-old high school freshman, was killed while on his way home from basketball practice. Witnesses say that...
14-year-old Marquise Richardson.
16-year-old Jeremiah Jones.
15-year-old Central McNeil.
Isaac Jordan, 13 years old.
16-year-old Cordell Bass.
16-year-old Bernard Lee.
16-year-old Landon S. Farrell.
Yet another tragedy in Chicago today. 15-year-old Aisha Clay was shot and killed while leaving Martin Luther King High. Aisha Clay was a promising student, a woman with a beautiful voice. At age 10, she performed at the White House. The former president and first lady issued this statement.
We are gathered here today to memorialize... It's a child, not a vet. Today, our hearts are filled with sorrow for a promise unfulfilled. I said that at the last eulogy. All right, let's go. Today, we abide in the duality of sorrow, for a life is lost, our failure as humans to protect the most precious among... Ah. Said that before, too. Come on, Mir. Think. Just think. Today is just more of the same. What's up, Bo? Yeah, I'm straight. Actually, I'm not. I'm having problems writing this eulogy, man. I know. But it's a shame how many times does tragedy have to strike before we initiate change? Yeah. Hold on, Bo. Yeah, what's up?
Room service.
Come in. The door's open. Just put the food over there.
Sir, I'm gonna need you to sign for this.
Thank you, young man. Yeah, Bo. Let me hit you back.
Have a nice day, sir.
Young man.
Yeah.
Dante, is it?
Yeah.
I like that. That's a strong name. Dante, where you from?
Chicago.
I figured that. Where you from in the city?
I'm from out south.
Oh, yeah? Where about?
Englewood.
Englewood, huh? Can I ask you another question?
Yeah, I guess.
With you being from Englewood, how do you feel about Aisha?
Who?
Aisha Clay, the young lady that got shot in Englewood. Did you know her?
Yeah, I know her.
So, how do you feel about it?
Nothing. I feel nothing.
Isn't that a problem?
Problem? What you mean? What problem?
That level of apathy that you have.
Apathy.
That spiritless emotion to it all. It's not just you, Tay. I feel like we all in this void of emotions, as if this violence that this city and others like it are experiencing is natural.
Yeah, well, I'll leave you to it.
Tay, wait. I would like to ask you a few more questions. That's if you don't mind, of course.
All right.
Have you ever witnessed a murder before?
Yeah.
How old were you then?
First time, when I was about 4, my aunt shot my uncle to death.
And do you recall the reason why she shot him?
No, I can't. I was too young to remember any of it.
And why did you refer to it as the first time?
Because the second time, the time that I actually remember, I had to been like 8. Back when we lived on 67th and Union, we used to play basketball over on Eggleston. I watched 2 guys fight over a dice game, and a loser stabbed the winner to death when he turned his back.
So, let me ask you this, Tay. How many times has that depth of violence impacted you?
Impacted me? I can't say. All I know is, for the last 8 years, it's been easier to count the lives left than the lives lost.
The last 8 years? How old are you, Tay?
I'm 20.
You only 20? Have you had any sort of counseling?
Counseling? For what?
Tay, the trauma that you've experienced is something that only children from third world countries could attest to. You sound as if you've been raised in a war zone.
Man, it ain't called Shot Rock for nothing. I gotta get back to work, man, before they send a search party for me. It was cool chopping it up with you, mister.
Just call me Mir.
All right, Mir.
Look, I'd like to speak with you again.
With me? For what?
I want to capture your story. What you've told me so far is unfortunate, but captivating. You embody this collective trauma and numbness at such an early age, and I'd like to know more about your story.
You want to know my story? Man, you reach. It ain't that deep. My life's just like everybody else. The story you need to be chasing is the why. People been killing around here from where I'm from since I was born, before my mama was born. If you trace the violence back, it'll give you a clue on how to eliminate the violence. That's the story you should write. But I'll check with you later.
Violence. violence has a story. The story of violence. That's it. The story of violence.
I am a man. I question every statement that I declare. Blurred lines pressed against margins. The future's left with half-truths to decipher. Heft in my chest, evidence my breath never waits for me. Running faster than these hounds chasing me. Damn it, I hate the sound of a bunch of barking at my bones, no looking back. No pillars of salt, just fear. The assault of growls and bite marks, lungs between the molars of these canines, gum lines hold pieces of my dignity. How far back are these memories?
I mistook claw marks for coat hanger scratches and my mother's underbelly. Since my first trimester, embryo spooks have hunted me, wearing bow ties and berets, trying to warn me, but I never could hear them. Over the house,
dragged through the birth canals by hounds tugging at my placenta. Piss on my crown, buried on the hopes that I would never be found. Breastfed on teats filled with puss and gal. When they ripped me from the mother, I heard the dogs. Fetching bones scattered in the transatlantic current.
Still, I can't shake this feeling. Freedom is a burning. Not enough kunta in me? Too much feeling? Dancing jigs, as if the only way to live is to plug strings, playing with themes and stereotypes.
I'm beat down by the pound. Sound surrounding me, drowning out my drum beat, stuck in a state of beware. I feel this ritual in my vasculars. Pitter-pattered hind legs got me cornered in this place of fear.
Who is it?
Yo, it's me, Lenny.
Thanks for coming, bro.
What's up, my boy? I came as soon as I could. I heard the urgency in your voice.
Man, I appreciate it. 1 minute. Hello? Yes, this is Amiri Clark. Sorry I missed your call. Yes, I know. So can we meet? Yeah. I'm at the Hilton, room 824. So you'll be here in 30? All right, peace. Sorry about that.
No problem. Just sitting here being nosy, looking at all this mess you got going on here.
You can't touch that till it cools.
If you don't want anyone reading this, you shouldn't leave it just lying around. Why are you writing with pen and paper anyway? It's only 2022.
Man, it's my process. I use the pen like a painter uses his brushes. The stroke only strengthens my art.
Well, you must be trying to be another Jackson Pollock, because I don't understand any of this chicken scratch. Nah, but really, why'd you call me over here? I gotta get up early tomorrow. I have a meeting with Paramount Studios for this new project I'm working on.
I called you over here for the Aisha Clay funeral. The family's pastor asked me to give her eulogy.
Man, such a tragic loss. It's truly a sad thing that's going on with my city, man. She was only 15.
I know, Lynn. It's the shame of it all that brought forth writer's block in me. But it did lead me to a conversation with a young man that sparked another idea in me.
And what's that, Mir?
Take another look at them papers.
The story of violence.
So many times we look at the reaction, but we never discuss the triggers, never discuss the why or the how. Lynn, I looked into this kid's eyes and there was barely any light in him. His eyes held so much gray.
Where's he from?
Englewood.
Yeah, that makes sense. But to be honest with you, there isn't much that's different from what's going on throughout the city.
Hey, have you read Native Son?
By Richard Wright, of course.
Fear, flight, fate. That's what I saw in his eyes, Lenny. Fear, flight, fate. But it's not just him with that look. It's the entire generation.
If you say so.
Ain't it obvious?
Nah, it isn't.
Growing up, guns wasn't a thing. But now they're all too common. Back in our day, the church was a place of congregation and celebration. Now we attend church only to honor our dead. You see the difference, Lenny?
You're living too much in the moment. Focus on the future, not on the past or the negative.
No, we in a state of emergency and have been since the Middle Passage. We were born and bred in violence, even to this day. We were snatched from the womb, handed to wet mammies, never clothed, never cradled, never exalted, never held up to the luminaries. There was no rite of passage, no cultural inheritance. Do you know why that is, Lenny? To kill this. To stop the beat of this drum.
My point is that we persist. Despite the odds, the hardships, and the trials, our day will come. And look how far we've come. I'm a walking, talking conflict, born from a Boricua soul, part Spaniard, part Ottoman, and part African, wrapped in warrior epidermal. My very being is unexplainable, and yet I'm here, and I'm proud.
Proud? Proud of what? What's there to be proud of? How can you be proud of a country that has never accepted you as its own?
The ideal of America. That's what I cherish. The hope of what we could be. No matter how the founding fathers defined me, freedom is absolute and unresting. The very thought of freedom means that we've already won. For thought is the cause of it all.
If only you could have seen Dante's eyes. It's open. Come in.
Yo, I had 20 minutes to spare, so I came back to chop it up with you.
Come in. Lynn, this the young man I've been telling you about, the one I wanted you to meet. Dante, this is my close friend, Lenny Marquez Martinez, a playwright, historian, rapper, among other things.
So Dante, he tells me you're from Englewood.
Yeah, born and raised.
And your family? Where are they initially from?
My people moved to Chicago from Alabama in the 1960s. We used to live in the Robert Taylors.
They arrived in the second wave of the Great Migration.
The what?
The Great Migration. At the start of the 20th century, an influx of minorities migrated north, including Puerto Ricans, who came from the islands in search of prosperity.
Back then, the North was viewed as a promised land by so many looking to escape the Jim Crow South and the financial hardships that accompany prejudice.
Chicago? The promised land? So what happened? I don't see much promise when I look around.
It's an accumulation of things. The closing of the stockyards. The population was booming, outpacing the employment opportunities.
And, you know, Chicago has always had cultural tensions. Whites assaulting blacks for being in the wrong areas, like the airport, homes in 1946.
At Trumbull Park in 1953.
In 66, when that brick struck King at Marquette Park.
And don't forget about the Red Summer riot.
You mean the Red Summer of 1919?
Yeah. What do you know about the Red Summer, young fella?
My great-granddad schooled me on it. Said that a racist white mob attacked a young black kid named Eugene Williams.
Please. Don't say that word.
Here we go.
Don't say what word?
The R word.
He talking about the word racist.
Racist? It's just a word. Why don't you want me to say that?
That word only has been around for 400 years. Its creation was born to sow deception, to confuse us into thinking we're different races. But we're all one race, a human race. Once we realize this, the world would be a better place.
Man, who is you? I've been around a lot of Puerto Ricans, Mexicans, Hispanics in general, and none of them talk about black and brown people coming together.
There's plenty of brothers who've come along, recognizing our plight is one. Brothers like Cesar Chavez.
Daddy Yankee?
Dante, you're my brother. The same blood that spills in Inglewood, Gresham, and Humble Park, Little Village, Wicker Park. We're all the same. What you looking for?
I'm looking for your leather jacket and beret you hid, Che Guevara.
Who?
Che Guevara, the revolutionary.
Man, y'all crazy, man. How y'all two link up?
We've been friends for ages, but what brought us here today is you.
Me?
Yeah, you. Do you remember that story you told me to write earlier?
What story?
The story of violence. I'm gonna write it.
Oh, word?
Yeah, word. But you were right.
Right about what?
To understand our reactions, we must identify our triggers that set them off. Our past is a barometer for our future. It gives us the answers to why the current climate is the way it is. Looking back, fear instilled in you a feeling of isolation. Isolation is one of the cogs that promoted violence here today. However, I'd like to start with your story because it's the story of violence.
You're going to have to hold that, though. I got to get back to work. Later, Mr. Mary. All right, Mr. Marquez.
All right, Tate. Peace.
All right, peace.
I saw it, Mir. I saw what you were talking about, that dullness in his eyes. But I also saw something else there, too.
Hold that thought. Young Driller, it's nice to meet you. I'm Amiri Clark.
Yeah, my manager told me about you. Said you wanted to do an article to promote my new album.
Well, not exactly. This is my good friend, Lynn Marquez.
Yeah, right. And what you mean, not exactly?
I'm working on an expose about the story of violence in Chicago, and I feel that the only way I can truly catch the essence of the streets is to hear from his voice, which is you.
Oh, here we go again. Y'all out-of-towners are always a trip. Always on a self-serving mission to save Chicago. What are you expecting to hear from me anyway?
I want to hear about the violence, about the trauma you've experienced. I want to know how do you feel about the city's conflict.
Yes, you can stream my catalog for all that.
I'm trying to understand how we got to this point. How did we get to the place to where we don't care about our children dying in the streets at an alarming rate?
We? Who is this we talking about? How many funerals have we paid for? How many bills have we paid to stop evictions? How many people have we lost? Right. I'm the one who's doing all that. Not we, me. That self-righteousness that you got, it ain't good for nothing but pointing fingers and shifting blame.
Young Driller, I didn't mean to offend.
You know, I've seen people like y'all 1,000 times over trying to solve problems from a penthouse suite.
People like who?
People like you, clown. With your need to be the hero, capping like you want to save the world, but all you really want is a photo op.
I'm from Chicago, from the same street you from.
Oh, so we the same now, huh? How about when your people be chasing me from 26th and Cali? I can't even ride through Little Village without getting rammed up. Man, get out of here with all that bull crap.
That's because we both victims. We've been tricked, having no culture of our own, to see that our plights are the same.
No culture, homie? No, we got that vulture culture, but you wouldn't understand.
That's what I'm speaking of right there. That type of thinking, that vulture culture you speak of, it only breeds survival, and survival only breeds people who rather riot than plan. It develops people who react rather than act, beg rather than earn, play rather than study, and follow rather than lead. That's what your vulture culture does.
So what you trying to say? That I'm a follower? A survivor? Does it look like I'm out here surviving?
Maybe my approach was wrong. If you feel like I lured you under that pretense, then I apologize. But Driller, I need your perspective on creating this article. You can speak to the reason why this violence is rapid and why you feel the need to play up this toughness.
I ain't playing. I ain't acting either. I'm as real as it gets.
Young Driller, that's not what I mean. You come from an environment where 1 out of 3 black men spends time in prison. Where the median income is the equivalent to the poverty rate, and where the unemployment rate is triple the national average. So of course you as real as it gets. But what I'm trying to say is that despite all the hardships around you, you didn't allow your environment to dictate your future.
Look, man, I feel you. But what does that have to do with violence?
Everything. One of the drivers of violence is poverty. Have you ever heard of redlining?
The train?
No, not the red line, redlining. Back then, banks would chart areas on a map that were predominantly dominated by blacks with red marks.
And why'd they do that?
To highlight that those areas were distressed and unworthy of investments.
And what does all that back then have to do with right now and here?
Every action reacts. The violence within our communities today is linked to the economic violence that we suffered yesterday. Redlining destroyed the possibility for investment in black communities and black dreams, and there's nothing more debilitating than a dream deferred. Unfortunately for so many of us, we couldn't rise above America's caste system. It's a shame to watch the very communities that we fought to be a part of deteriorate in the areas that were undereducated, underserved, and undervalued. Until we become like the predatory lenders themselves, capitalizing on our own people's despair in the midst of war. Until then, we will be both the villains and victims.
War? What war?
The war on drugs.
That war didn't improve our communities. It only further deteriorated our neighborhoods, turning them into feeder communities for the prison pipeline.
Yeah, my old man got snatched up in that pipeline.
I'm sorry that your father was a victim.
My old man wasn't no victim. He's a boss. He took care of his family and community for 20 years, and 20 years later, they still talk about him. All the good he did. Man, redlining wasn't no factor for him. He made the impossible possible. He owned restaurants, laundromats, car washes, barbershops, clothing stores.
But at what cost? Look, I know that you love your father, but I'm tired of us celebrating criminals like Rick Ross and Big Meech and even the fictional characters like Nino Brown and Avon Barksdale and Ghost. Generation after generation is infected by these minstreling fools.
Hey, you need to watch your mouth.
Everybody,
who you calling
down
a fool? No, you calm down.
Look. I'm sorry. That's not what I meant.
No, you meant it. So who's the fool? My old man by taking care of his community by any means necessary?
I don't think that's what he meant.
Believing in him? Man, ain't nobody talking to you. I know what he meant. I know exactly what he meant.
You ain't been where I've been, so let me take the time to take you there. Where the innocence of children get met with cold stares. It's blood on my corner where my homie lost his soul. Same corner of the building where my uncle once paroled. Streets taught me everything, educated, molded me. My daddy locked up, she's screaming, that's where he supposed to be. Social security checks and food stamps, the only way we eat. Every day I'm outside like I'm camping in these streets. Only the cars got tents though, kick, push, drop a load, drive off slow. Gunshots ring out. Yeah, you know I'm used to them. Neighborhood drunk. That's my family. You know I'm used to him. Mama, she a single parent. Trying to teach what ain't a parent. You think you understand it, but you'll never ever get it. It's the reason why I sold drugs. The reason why I lack feeling. I ain't never root for no Batman. I was too busy ruling for the villain.
You say that you driller. That ain't true. You be in the stoop, bragging about bodies on some shorties that don't play with tools. Your shooters out here tweaking, shooting kids on their way to school, acting like you active in Iraq. Who you trying to fool? You be out in Cali flying private, guess you living decent. I be right here posted in this lobby, trying to fight these demons, thinking I should go with Nellis people. This hunting season, know I got the hit back, get my lip back in the name of Isha. I'm really in these trenches with these drenches. Don't care for Christmas, starving, so I'm mobbing out here robbing, trying to duck a sentence. Every time I look up, I just see another census killing. I done seen so many people murdered, I ain't got no feelings. Hard to crack a smile when the ones who did it out here living. I can't let it go or let it show. Well, I got to get them. Catch them in this lobby, ain't no probably. I got to hit them. Catch them in this lobby, ain't no probably. Well, I got to hit them.
Amiri, if I catch you out there, it's gonna be a problem. Oh, what? Y'all call 12 on me?
Young driller, nice to meet you.
Mr. President? You know me?
Of course. Everybody knows who you are. You're the biggest rap star on the planet right now. So, I've done my homework on you. I'm aware of your charitable donations, the businesses you own, and the hiring practices you employ, including giving parolees a second chance.
Listen, Mr. President, I can't take credit for all that. My old man is the one who taught me how to invest into my community. But according to them, he's a fool.
Look, again, that's not what I meant. But I apologize if I offended you. I wanted to highlight the lack of positive influences to balance out the negative ones.
What do you think my father is to me? He never put a gun in my hand. Never gave me a pack to sell. His only flaw was that he wasn't present, but when he did his best to be a part of my life.
When tough on crime legislation was passed, there was no consideration of the impact on black and brown families. I believe that children were affected the most, forced to live in the shadows of their parents' infamy. In so many cases, the individuals who committed those crimes were children themselves. Son, you're fortunate to share such a bond with your father, despite being separated for so long. Is he still incarcerated?
Nah. My old man was released a few years ago. We're still trying to make up for lost time.
You know, if you really want to live up to your father's legacy, then you should use your platform to speak on the good you do in your community.
Sharing all the goodwill you do will encourage others to give, compounding the blessings for your community.
I hear you. But don't nobody want to listen to that from me? I'm Young Driller. I'm supposed to rap about drilling.
Your talent is merely a conduit for the world to witness your light. So, trust me, the world will listen to whatever you have to say.
I hear you. And I want to thank you, Mr. President.
For what?
When I was 11, I was there when you gave your victory speech at Millennium Park. You said, all things are possible. When you said that, it was like you were talking directly to me. You accomplished what I thought no one could, and it inspired me to reach higher than I thought I could.
That's because we're the same. We just chose different paths. I, too, was raised in a single-parent home without my father. But despite growing up without his presence, I've ascended to the highest office in the world.
But, Mr. President, I mean no disrespect, but I didn't grow up in Hawaii. I grew up in Inglewood, where jail or the graveyard is more likely than college. And I don't see how an article is going to help stop the violence.
Again, to stop what's happening, we need to know why it's happening. It's all connected. Violence begets violence.
I hear you. So what's next?
We are leaders in our own right. What if we came up with our own solution and put together our own plan to curb the violence?
How are we going to change anything?
It was almost 240 years ago that men gathered in a place like this. These men weren't perfect, but their belief in liberty led to the creation of the Constitution, which, to this day, instills hope, despite its trajectory not being linear.
So y'all really think y'all can make a change in my city?
Your city is our city, remember?
Most often, we tend to complain when we don't have the solutions. Well, instead of complaining, let's start creating the solutions right here, right now.
All right. I'm in.
Whoa. Oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used to be.
You're listening to a radio adaptation of The Story of Violence from Chicago's Mud Theater Project. Stay tuned for the second act and an interview with the playwrights here on Prison Cast from WBEZ Chicago and Illinois Public Radio after a break.
Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury.
Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to a radio adaptation of The Story of Violence from Chicago's Mud Theater Project, here on a special episode of Prison Cast.
Man, we've been here for 5 hours.
I tell you, I'm gonna have to explain this to my wife.
I got you. But we making progress. Yo, Driller. Driller, wake up.
Yeah. What's up?
Man, youngster, when I was your age, I could stay up days without getting no sleep.
When you were my age, you slept on a stone slab instead of beds.
Oh, you joining, huh? I got you. We making progress. We've identified the 4 key drivers of violence, which are shame, isolation, exposure to violence, and inability to fulfill economic needs. Now our dilemma is finding a service that can help us address some of these issues.
Whatever service we provide, it should be educational in nature. Inglewood has some of the lowest test scores in the state. Better education leads to a better environment, more resources, and a reduction in crime and violence.
But standardized testing has failed our community. We need to create a culture that fosters our children's desire to learn.
Man, people need jobs, not lectures. Give them something to eat, then they'll listen.
But if we teach them how to fish, then they can feed themselves. What about the LOI?
The LOI?
Yeah. The Lost Ones Initiative mission is to employ, educate, and establish pathways towards financial freedom for second-chance citizens and people from underserved communities.
I know the organization's innovator, Toussaint Daniels.
Toussaint Daniels? Ain't that the guy who spent 20 years in prison?
Yeah, that's him. His vision is to create communities of entrepreneurs from low-income communities who will then reinvest in the very communities that raised them.
Any of these services that we look to provide will be helpful. However, there's more to curbing the violence than providing jobs and information.
Like what?
Like changing the culture. I believe that if we change the culture, it'll breed the violence out of us.
But how do we do it? Change the culture.
Y'all ever heard of restorative justice? So much of the violence goes without atonement or addressing the trauma we've committed. Rarely do we ever reflect and dissect the negative impact of our errors. And restorative justice practices can help heal our communities and offenders, offering a path towards reclaiming their humanity.
I don't know, Lynn. I think it's a stretch that those who commit violent crimes, and more importantly, the victims, will receive true justice through community circles.
We have to start thinking of alternative methods of dealing with crime. You know, incarceration doesn't reduce violence. It generates it. And restorative justice is a preventive method to straighten the paths of our youth before irreparable damage is done.
There y'all go again with this save the world crap. If y'all want to stop crime, show them commas. It's all about that comma culture, you feel me?
All of you are right. The issues that perpetuate the violence in our communities are educational, financial, and cultural. Attacking these issues individually will be akin to fixing a hole in a wall with duct tape. Violence is loud, aggressive, and unyielding. And we cannot contest it with pacifism. If we intend to change our futures truly, then we must meet violence with the requisite force. Let's work on creating a civic center.
A civic center?
Yeah, a civic center. A building that would host all the programs and organizations that we've spoken about and much, much more.
How much more?
Well, what do you imagine?
I see. I can see a theater workshop.
A theater workshop? Man, what's that gonna do?
It'll inspire creativity, just as your music does.
Ah, I feel you. Yo, I could put a studio in there.
We could add a gym. Physical health is just as important as financial, cultural, and educational health.
We can do it all, gentlemen. A gym, studio, theater, mentor program, financial literacy courses, violence prevention unit, restorative justice, and anything else to help curb the violence.
Come in.
Man, what in the world y'all got going on in here? Mr. Amir.
How you doing, Tay? I got a few people I would like you to meet. This is...
Mr. President!
Nice to meet you, Dante.
Man, I wish I had my phone with me so I could take a picture with you. Nobody gonna believe this.
Don't worry. I'll make sure that we can take a picture before I leave here today.
And Dante, this is...
Young Driller!
Hey, man.
Come on.
Hey, what's going on here?
Hold up.
Man, let me go, man.
Get off, man. Man, who is this kid? Hey, who is this kid? What y'all done got me into?
I'll show you what I'm into as soon as they let me loose.
Dante, if you promise to keep your cool, then we'll let you go. Do I have your word?
All right, man.
Now, what's going on? How long have you two known each other?
Man, I don't know this stuff.
I got your stuff.
Hey, Tay, calm down.
It's Dante. Dante. Stop acting like you know me, fam. You don't know me. Don't none of y'all know me. Y'all supposed to be here for Aisha, but this fool the reason why she dead.
What? Boy, you tripping. I ain't had nothing to do with that.
Man, tripping. Them dudes from your block, they know what I'm talking about, fam.
I ain't your fam.
Stop it. Just stop it. Don't you all know that y'all the same?
Man, he ain't nothing to me.
If you ain't related by blood, then you related by circumstances.
Circumstances? You really want to talk about circumstances? I ain't got the luxury to mourn. For all the L's I take, I'm too busy surviving. Earlier you asked me every question except the one question. The one question that was the most important. And do you know what that question is?
No, I don't.
How did I know Aisha? That's what you should have asked me. Because had you asked me, I would have told you that she was my cousin. We called her Cookie. And I would have said she was afraid of the dark and had to sleep with the lights on. And I would have told you that my brother was shot when she got shot.
Dante, son, I
ain't your son.
Dante, I see, man.
What you see? What y'all look at me? What do you see when you look at me?
Dante.
Nah, what do you see?
Dante, I understand.
Nah, you don't understand. How could you? Every day you get to go home and feel safe. Even you, Driller. Your daughter lives nowhere near where we grew up. Me? I gotta live within these two worlds. One world, you can lose your life for looking at the wrong person on the wrong day. And the other, I gotta cater to you, Amiri, just to get by and provide the little bit I can for my son while my brother fights for his life. The hell with you. The hell with all of you.
Dante, just calm down.
I told you don't know me.
Dante.
What, man?
The phone call. It's for you.
What? Hello? Yeah. What up, Ma? Nah, Ma, don't say that. Nah, Ma, don't say that.
It's his brother. He died.
Nah. Just leave me alone. Stop. Leave me alone. It's all your fault.
I know, Dante. I know, man. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, little bro.
I'm so sorry.
Dear Violence, you are a friend to no one. No matter which side of the pendulum your actions fall, whether you are victim or perpetrator, you send shockwaves through people, families, and communities. We have cowered in the face of the fear that you instill, taking flight from the mere notion of your arrival, allowing you to dictate culture and turn our communities into these apathetic environments. You stripped us of our greatest power, which is our humanity. For humanity is the proof that there is something greater than ourselves. But no more. We will rise above your narrative and build bonds that seek resolution when conflicts arise. Our fate will be determined by our love for one another. Our light will not swelter in the darkness you cast. You will not win. I will not give you a eulogy because you deserve no tribute. But this is the end of your story.
You've been listening to an adaptation of The Story of Violence here on Prison Cast from WBEZ and Illinois Public Radio. This play was produced by the Mud Theater Project in Chicago. It was performed in studio by Darius Franklin, Benny Lopez, Kevin Trayvon Patterson, Yoel Davis, and Nolan Jackson. We also heard spoken word pieces from performers inside Dixon Correctional Center, Lionel Berry, Jose Saucedo, Curtis Clark, Jesse Martinez, and Eric Golston. The play was co-written by the Mud Theater writing team, led by Toussaint Daniels. We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us because coming up, we'll sit down with two of the play's writers to hear how they brought this production to life while they were still incarcerated. You're listening to Prison Cast from WBEZ Chicago and Illinois Public Radio. Welcome back to Prison Cast from WBEZ Chicago and Illinois Public Radio. I'm your host, Erin Allen. Prison Cast is a radio show for people incarcerated in Illinois and their loved ones. And today's episode is a special one. For one, we're taping in front of a live studio audience. Hey, y'all. And in partnership with the Mud Theater Project, we just listened to The Story of Violence, a radio play written and performed mostly by currently and formerly incarcerated people. And I'm sitting here with two of those people to talk about how they brought this play from the page to the stage, first inside of prison, and now here at our WBEZ studios. Brian Beals is a co-founder of the Mud Theater Project and a contributor to this production. Brian, welcome back to Prison Cast.
Thanks, Erin. Glad to be here.
And Toussaint Daniels is the lead writer of The Story of Violence and also a co-founder of the Mud Theater Project. Toussaint, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right. So, Brian, 4 years ago, you were in prison reading this editorial in the Sun-Times about stopping violence in Chicago. And now here we are on the radio performing the play you all wrote. What made you answer the call in that editorial in the first place? And why did you answer it with a play?
Well, in 2018, when we founded the Dixon Performing Arts Program, we were always looking for ways to prove or message to let people know on the outside that we were working, you know, and what let people know on the outside. Not only were we working to impact what was going on inside, we wanted our work to reach outside. And a play was the only vehicle that we could figure that if we wrote it well enough, well-intentioned, that if we, you know, got some traction with it, then people begin to understand that we were not only doing good work for ourselves, but for the community as well.
And Toussaint, you were a part of this whole process. I mean, you're the lead writer, but you are just now seeing the play be performed live for the first time. How are you feeling? I mean, what is that like?
You know, it was visceral. As a term I've often used since I've been home, like living in these moments that are surreal, because, you know, truth of the matter is the accumulation of this particular play was beyond just myself, but it was those gentlemen you heard reciting the spoken word and the rap. It was Timothy Jones. It was Andre Alexander. It was Natty Y. Moore. It was Maggie Anderson. It was... It was so many more people in those particular spaces that existed with us to kind of help create and cultivate this idea and give it back to our community. So,
and can you tell us, just for the people who don't know, why did you not get to watch the play when it was performed in prison?
Yeah, I missed the lead. I got transferred. I got transferred while we was doing the production of the particular play. So I think I actually had stood in for one initial meeting after it was ready that we was planning on to producing it, but I got transferred abruptly. And, you know, as always, man, you know, my brother took off the slack and made sure that it was a flawless production.
Brian, you mentioned in the past you and the other writers were worried that people would question your motives in writing this play about preventing violence, since some of you were incarcerated for violent crimes. And I would love to hear you talk about why you think it was important to write it anyway. Why do you think you wanted to really add your voice to the conversation this way?
So it's like when you're incarcerated, everything that you do is questioned. Every day that you come out of your cell, you say you're going somewhere, it's questioned. And over time, it just erodes your confidence. It attacks your integrity. And we were looking for a way to establish our integrity, you know, to get our confidence back, to feel a part of the community. And that's why we decided to write it. Like you mentioned, when I read the editorial, and we just happened to have a meeting that day, the next day, and I took it into the room, and everybody got excited. It was like, you know what? This is the vehicle we need to reclaim our narrative, that we are from a community that supports and loves us, that people want to see us come home. We had to overcome a lot of hardships to get that play produced in Dixon. And it was the very first time that an outside group of people came to witness something that we wrote. And by that time, we had became national award-winning playwrights, national award-winning poets, memoirists, essayists, winning in some of the biggest competitions that the United States had to offer. And that was our dream, to get it beyond the wall, like actually sit in a dream right now, still being in fellowship with the brothers and their families who never got a chance to see Jose perform on stage or Curtis perform on stage. I can't imagine Jesse and the guys in Dixon right now just, you know, just how they feel and how proud they are to finally getting to see his play.
What an honor to be a part of this. Tell me about the writing process. Toussaint, what were the most important themes you wanted to address?
It kind of really started like when Brian brought the article and we surmised. We never seen One Night in Miami, directed by Regina King. And he was like, man, what if we kept it in the hotel? Like, and this all is presumption because we never actually seen it. We like at this, they wasn't letting the movie come in at that particular time. So I was like, okay, let me work with that theme. And one of my favorite writers, if not my favorite writer, is Richard Wright in Native Son, and how we embody that psychosis, all predicated by fear, and how fear lands us to this particular space. And from that point, we start telling the story, somewhat linear, about how do we get here. I went around, and I asked person, how do we get here? How do you get here? Nobody knew about the Great Migration. I asked me, and do you know who your great-grandfather was? Rarely could anybody even tell me. And so it's this trace of us not knowing ourselves, and we haven't letting them perception kind of rule us and teach us. I had the fortune of being taught by Brian Beals. You know, he was like my pseudo-political education teaching me about redlining and predatory lending and all these other things. And from that, you know, I dove into scholars who wrote in this way. So me having this back form of knowledge and having all this amazing talent, and I say this understanding that no person gets here by themselves, right? That we are all accumulative of one another. We are all compound factors that make this whole. And truly, the Dixon Theater Workshop was that. And they just helped cultivate it and nurture the words in order to kind of just arrive at this particular point where we created a story, and a story of violence.
Do you feel like you've told the story of violence with this production?
Well, I think from the points that were made, violence didn't just get here overnight. It was developed, you know, decade after decade, from ancient wrongs to, you know, modern day wrongs to no child is born criminal or violent. It's the conditions that they live in. And we were just trying to spark a conversation. You know, we didn't have the answer, of course, but we just wanted a seat at the table to have an opportunity, you know, to talk about it from our perspective, which was unique. You know, just living in a prison in and of itself is violent. You know, violent because so much is taken away from you, mentally stripped of your dignity, you know, of just your peace, your sanity. And so we tried to just spark that conversation.
Like I said, violence unyielding in us as a community, our greatest part of us is our humanity. And the more we pour into that, and the more we believe that there's a bridge to always be connected, then, you know, that is the answer. To see yourself when you see one another.
Hmm. Brian Beals is the co-founder of the Mud Theater Project and a contributor to this production. Brian, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Toussaint Daniels is the lead writer of The Story of Violence, also a co-founder of the Mud Theater Project. Toussaint, thank you.
Pleasure's all, man.
You can learn more about their work and their upcoming productions at mudtheaterproject.org. And thank you to all of you in the audience for being with us for this special episode of Prison Cast. Our executive producer is Lauren Frost. Our editor is Alex Keefe. Dave Miska is our audio engineer. Brian Ernst and Zubair Khan make up our video crew. Special thanks to Tracy Brown and Kate Walsh. Our Prison Cast holiday show airs statewide on Sunday, December 14th. Learn more at wbez.org/prisoncast. I'm your host, Erin Allen. Thank you.